This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. I'm your host, Logan Medish of High Caliber History, and I am joined around the table by a truly colorful cast of characters. Honored to have everybody here. We've got Brett Voorhees from Taurus, and we have Mike Scobie and Donald Trump Jr. from Field Ethos. All three gentlemen, thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedules to be here today.
Good to be here, man.
Happy to do it. Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. So there is obviously a hell of a lot of things that we can cover and we can talk about. And we just kind of want to make this a little bit of an irreverent, fun episode. You know, we want to talk hunting. We want to talk guns. So who wants to start it off and tell a hell of a good gun hunting story?
Gun hunting story? Well, I got a lot. I mean, Brett's got some good ones recently.
Yeah. We had some exciting years last couple of years. And
you and Scobie's, I hunted Africa together, 2 years ago?
2 years ago. And yeah. Scobie's been doing this his whole career. So,
You started off.
It's basically all I do at this point, so other than trying to save the free world.
Yeah, so I guess, we can kick it off. So one of the things I've enjoyed about being in the industry so much is being able to travel, and I've just caught the bug to travel internationally for hunting trips.
Sure.
It kind of started when I was at Walther, spend all day in the factory, and then go hunt roe deer at night, and then stay up until 2 and drink in, and it was just like the best times, when I was kind of a little bit younger. But I got the bug for Africa in 2018, and then talked to Scobie quite a bit after that about going back with him. We tried to plan a trip, and I think COVID hit.
That's right.
And then was it late 21 that we went or 22?
Yeah, that was the trip we took Kohlhauser, the Yellowstone Rip Wheeler character.
Oh, okay.
His first safari as well. And
Pat Hemingway Adams.
Pat Hemingway. That was pretty cool.
We just had Pat on the show. Pat's a great guy.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Really? You had him on for a half an hour. You still think he's a great guy?
He was a little hungover, so maybe we were, you know, had a little more control
over shocked.
Him,
I'm shocked to hear that.
He can present well for about 30 minutes.
Clean
he can
up,
button it down for 30
fun.
Minutes.
So I mean, Africa. That's the dream for so many folks, right? And I'll be going for the first time in 2025.
Fantastic.
And so, you know, for first time Africa guys, like what's the best advice you have? Whether it's gun advice, gear advice, mindset advice.
Absolute mindset, I would say.
Mindset.
People go there and make a huge mistake, I think. If you want, I need to get this, and I need to get this, and I need to have a checklist. Just go there and go, I'm going to experience it. I'm going to shoot what happens, you know, shoot whatever animal appears, and it's, you know, something I'm interested in. Because it'll be species you never thought you wanted, right?
Like right.
People go there and go, I never shoot a zebra. And after you see him, you go, I got to shoot a zebra.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so don't go with a list. Go there, just open mind, and go, let's see what the bush provides today. I mean, you just got back from
I took my son on his first Africa safari. I've been going for 20 years, and this was a lot nicer than my first trip, which was like literally I was working at a bar in Colorado right out of college, and a couple of the other guys that worked there were South African rugby players, and they were like, you've never hunted Africa? I was like, no. So I'm 20 years old, and we literally got on a plane, jumped in my buddy's pickup truck, bribed our way across the border into Zimbabwe, and we literally went to farms and just be like, hey, if we give you, you know, $100 a day and you keep whatever meat we don't eat, can we do that? And we did like 10,000 miles like off road through Zimbabwe. It was not your typical safari, but it was like one of the last great adventures. I mean, held up at gunpoint, like literally bartering for gas and fuel, like during some of the crises that were going on there. It was just insane. It's something that if my son told me, I'd be like, you dumbass, you could have gotten killed. But like at the time I was too stupid to know the difference, and I couldn't have afforded, you know, I just sort of, you know, for me being really first generation hunter, like I was sort of learning along the way. And so, you know, we just did it with nothing, and it was awesome. Just took my son for his first safari. He's 14. I always tell him, you know, in my next life, I want to come back as my kid. he's got it a lot better than me with that. But we were up in the Maasai in the Tanzania.
Okay.
And it's to that point, it's like there is no checklist. It's like go around, see something. If you see something that's an awesome opportunity, put the stalk on, get it done. And, you know, we had an absolute blast. And he's just like, hey, when are we going back? Well, but
when
it
you
is
get a
different.
Job and
yeah, I know. No, he's like, I want to shoot lesser kudu too, and like lesser kudu and kudu are two very different things, right? It's sort of like
price points are very different.
The price point is very different. It was like, no, little boy, like you can do that when you get a job. But you know, for me, it's been awesome, just you know, getting my boys into it, and you know, my daughters shoot. They're not as into the hunting yet. Maybe that'll come. But you know, we've just seen the world. I mean, he's been, my 14-year-old's been to Mongolia twice in the steeps, you know, hunting sheep at 14,000 feet.
Wow.
And like, you know, kids gotten some real adventure, and that's what so much of it, it's just getting out of our comfort zones, living in cities or towns or having everything easy.
Sure.
You know, live in a yurt with, you know, Mongolian, you know, literally goat herders and sheep herders for, you know, 2-3 weeks. It's like that's a real world experience.
Wow. So what kind of armament you guys taking over there? What were you and your son shooting?
So I was shooting in Africa. I had a Blaser R8 set up for like more of a big bore gun, you know, Buffalo, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And then I had a Gunworks 7 PRC for him for all the Plains game stuff. You know, the Mongolia stuff, usually same thing, you know, some sort of, you know, big 6.5, you know, or 300.
And really, I think guys think they need like a 375. Unless you're hunting dangerous game, you know, buffalo, you can go with.
You can do everything with a 300 Win Mag in Africa,
all day
probably long. Including buffalo. I may or may not have actual real world experience with that, but you know where legal. But especially you know for a kid like you know the stuff is tough there, but it is all like everything else. It's all shot placement, right? But Africa game is just tougher. Everything in Africa will kill you. It's just, you know, but they just evolve. I mean, you joked about zebra. Like, that's on everyone's list. But, like, zebra pound for pound is one of the toughest animals anywhere in the world, by far.
No,
like,
I've just seen so many guys with perfect shot placement, perfect bullets, perfect everything,
and then they end up
chasing it for
miles.
7 hours. You know,
that one Pat Hemingway shot with a 375 twice through the heart, and it still went quite a way.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they're much tougher than you think.
So he told us his buffalo hunting story, and so from that, it sounds like he had an easier time bringing down the buffalo than he did bringing down the zebra.
He fired two rounds at the same time at the buffalo. So.
He did tell us that, and then he looked around to see if anyone noticed.
Yeah.
That was my
time. So that wasn't that was just like the second hammer hit.
It's a double trigger, right?
It's my double rifle. It's a Sabati 500, and he double stroke double trigger on it. What he did.
Nice.
Got a little excited.
It happens.
Oh, that's funny. So, Brett, with being with Taurus, and talk us through with some of the guns that you guys are excited about there and hunting with some of those pieces, because you guys have some serious hunting guns in the lineup that people are they don't necessarily think Taurus and hunting, but
we're starting to grow into that. So we actually just launched a new bolt action hunting rifle called the Expedition rifle. Mike and I and a bunch of guys have kind of worked on that over the last couple of years. Mike's been down to Brazil to kind of see the early stages of that development, but we've had big bore hunting revolvers for quite a while now.
Right.
Yeah. Our Raging Hunter line is one of our most popular lines that we have, and we expanded that into some really big bore stuff, 460 and 500 Smith & Wesson Magnums.
The 460 is fun. I've shot that gun. That's fun.
Well, honestly, what Brett has done there is really amazing. I mean, the Raging Hunter line, and I do a lot of big bore hunting with handguns because where I came from was – shotgun only zones or all this kind of, they made it impossible up in New York. So I got into sort of, I have a 338 Lapua improved in an old Remington XP and stuff like that. So I went way down the rabbit hole. But when we started working together, it was like, I don't know. I got a bunch of Freedom Arms. My Taurus Raging Hunter will shoot right in there just with a red dot shooting 3 inches groups at 100 yards out of a Taurus.
Hitting steel at 400 yards.
Well, you've seen me do that. I think I went,
I can't remember. Well, if it was
it was 5 for 6.
Yeah,
for 6 at 400 yards with irons,
like a
coyote silhouette. Once you figure out the drop, you guys have turned around that brand and really just make some badass guns that just for the value and for the money. Like there's not much out there that could run with it.
Yeah,
it was interesting when I went down to Brazil with you to see the factory. You don't know what to expect when you go to third world country if it is.
Sure.
What kind of manufacturing quality have? And I've been to every gun manufacturing facility and ammo probably in the world, and it rates right up there with the German stuff and the American stuff.
Really?
I mean, it's all CNC. It's a huge complex. I mean, it was way bigger than I thought it would be with all state-of-the-art equipment there.
Yeah.
And you're watching guys hand fit everything and check everything.
The floors are clean. It's well lit. It's really is a state-of-the-art factory. It's not what you would expect.
Right.
But, they've made that investment since about 2015.
Yeah. Okay.
Really out of necessity. But, they just decided to change the company. And then when they brought me on board, it was like, okay, let's start telling this message
Brett's also a full, and I'm a way down the rabbit hole gun nerd and stuff like that. And when I talked to him, I was like, oh, wow, he's one of the few CEOs in the industry that actually understands, guns. Meaning there's business CEOs, but there's guys,
he's
a machinist and an engineer,
CEO.
And he gets that. And so, I mean, I'll tell the story how we started sort of working with Field Ethos,
Because
if you're okay with that.
Yeah, of course.
And he's like, hey, we'd love to do something with you. And we're like, Taurus, he goes, how about this? We'll send you some stuff. You guys play with it. And in 1 year, you write a review, and whatever you want to say, it's total game. I mean, wait a minute.
No
strings. And so that was the test. It's like, we'll put our entire, you can shit on us all you want. We lose the year, whatever it is. And, we literally could not be more impressed. And that's why it was so psyched to see that someone do that. You took a brand that was great that sort of went downhill, and he's brought it back, and he gets that world in a way that most don't.
Right?
I actually use the guns, too. And if someone can break a gun, it's me. I will be the one to do it. I fucked up our first Expedition rifle that came into the U.S. I just abused the hell out of that thing. And
really?
I still have it, but it's pretty broken. But we made some changes off of that, though, and learned some things. And so, that went well. But, this is kind of the story that one of the guys wanted me to tell here. But I actually use our products, and I trust them, so much so that I took our 460 Raging Hunter and shot a Cape Buffalo with it. And, not a lot of people are really willing to be that close to Buffalo in general.
Yeah.
But the way the hunt all played out and all that, I ended up being way, way closer than I really wanted to. But the gun performed flawlessly, and did exactly what it was supposed to do. And it was actually very handy to use, you know, because I ended up in a very tight spot, very, very thick bush at 4 yards from a
4 yards
from a bull cape buffalo.
Holy shit.
That we had already bumped twice in the last hour. So he knew we were there. And I didn't have to wield around this big, heavy rifle.
Right.
Pulled up my my Raging Hunter with the red dot on it and
4 yards.
Got to blazing. And, yeah, the thing dropped and tried to stand up, shot it again, and just started tumbling down the hill. And
how many shots did you put in him?
I ended up shooting all five just because talking to Jason Horney, he's like,
just keep shooting. Once you draw blood on a buffalo or any of the dangerous game stuff, like, it's not about, well, I did it with one. It doesn't matter. Like,
right.
It could be very well dead, but it could also very well not be. And you don't want to find out the hard way.
You want to live to tell the tale, right? That's the end of the.
Yeah, and, like, it was probably a little bit of adrenaline high going, too. So I just kept shooting and all that and then reloaded, and which wasn't necessary. But, yeah, I mean, that was super exciting hunt.
Hell
and,
yeah.
You know, cool experience, and I got to do it with our guns. And you know,
awesome.
We don't have a dangerous game rifle or anything like that.
Right. And most people don't have dangerous game rifle. Like, not just tourists doesn't have one, but
they
most
should. They
well,
should.
They absolutely they
should. Even if they live in
you
Wisconsin
know?
And never plan to go to Africa, they should
yeah,
have I'm, a double
hey,
rifle.
Hey, my wife is from Wisconsin. I've been back there. There are times I wish I had a dangerous game rifle. I'm from Detroit. I wish I had a dangerous game rifle, you know? So... But I mean, that's awesome, you know, to take a Cape Buffalo with a handgun. I mean, that's just
very
really
few guys
cool.
have ever done that.
Yeah,
that's
I was
rare.
Yeah. When we started getting the 460s in kind of the production phase, I was talking to Scobie about buffalo hunting and got really interested in it. And I just kind of decided that'd be a cool thing to do. I didn't know it'd be my first Cape Buffalo. Didn't know it'd be at 4 yards. You know, I was prepared to shoot at 30, 40, 50 yards, something like that.
Go big or go home, right?
Yeah, and I knew the terrain where we were going to be. It was going to be close, but I didn't expect 4 yards for sure.
Yeah. Well, so cool. Mike and Don, you know, you talk about Field Ethos working with Taurus. So, but tell us, you know, what is Field Ethos for those who don't know?
Turn that over to you.
Well, so it's basically a multimedia outdoor company. We have a quarterly print journal, high end, you know, really good photography, really good writing, witty. But it really started off, honestly, it was a couple buddies in a text thread. We were talking shit about so much of what goes on in hunting, fishing, and honestly even shooting these days, where it's, you know, 9,000 ways to catch spring bass. It's like, I've been reading this article for 45 years. No,
right.
No one's having the real conversation that I have around a campfire that I have had all over the world, you know?
Sure.
You see some of the guys, we saved the hoof of the elk so that we could carve a chess piece out of it. It's like, come on, man. You're allowed to like hunting. You're allowed to talk shit. Like, it's sort of interesting. So it's just an unapologetically, you know, masculine, outdoor, multimedia brand. And what's sort of amazing is it's actually taken off incredibly, but like 35% of our following is female because they too don't mind actually like masculine men, and that's okay.
Right.
And we can have guy talk, and it doesn't mean it's disrespect. You know, we're not the women that we have that work with are sort of professionals at what they do in the outdoors, not like a gun bunny who's, you know, got the trigger discipline of a 4-year-old with a squirt gun. It's just, you know, so you can do it differently, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, I think the other thing that really sets us apart, everything you said is exactly the right way to describe Field Ethos. You know, we've also came up with it, live an iconic lifestyle. So it's not just a hunt, fish, shoot mag. It is a
adventure.
We want to inspire people to go do these things on their own and kind of lead by example. And I think the final tier of Field Ethos that really separates it is the fact that it's really unapologetically honest. So like we talked about with our partners, we have advertising partners. And we shit on them occasionally. If it's not,
you've had some that got upset.
And they get upset. And it's like, look, we love X, Y, Z, all these other products. This one, it's a dud. And we're very honest with our readers about that. And while it's painful at the time, it instills trust in us that we're going to tell you the truth about this. It's not, oh, they paid for it, so we got to gloss over it. It's like, no, we're still friends, but you know, this one didn't work so well.
We've had a couple of the big advertisers like literally call it back. Listen, we love what you're doing. We're sending you a letter because the board's upset that you took it too far with this, but we actually, it's actually working. We're seeing people calling because of it. And so that honesty is also missing.
Sure.
You know, we turn down ad dollars. You know, for me, it's my passion project, right? But it's never going to be, you know, what makes me rich. I just love doing it. So it doesn't matter. We can turn down advertisers. Like, well, why would you turn us down? We're willing to stroke a check for, it's like,
that's because not what it's about.
Because I'd never use that shit in the field.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't use it. So I'm not going to sell it to other people and pretend like it is. And so, you know, perhaps we put our own limitations on it. But again, I think people see that. They get it. It's not, you know, 90 pages of advertising with one article that's, you know, recycled, you know, for the last 30 years. It's
right.
You know, it's good stuff, quality stuff, and even the stuff that's not necessarily a high price point, we're running it through. We're putting it through the paces. It's not just because Torres can write the check. It's like, well, we'll do it, but you're going to, you know, but we're going to give you the honest assessment. And,
right.
you know, when guys take the risk on that, that means something.
And so counterintuitive when I took – I used to run legacy media brands. Peterson's Hunting was the editor-in-chief, and Guns and Ammo was the publisher for the whole shooting group. And I joke, and not really joking, that I would sell PETA an ad campaign if they wanted to. I mean, I would right. sell to anybody at any time. I like money. And, you know, Kevin DeDonald, I'm like, hey, this company wants to give us money. And he's like, do you use that product? I'm like, no. He's like, we don't want to talk about it then. I'm like,
right.
good point. Yeah, but I did not start my career that way.
Yeah, no, and it, by the way, and no one does, but that's the problem, right?
It's, right.
It, everything's been so corporate. Well, it's revenue. It's like, I get it. That's great. But, like, I think we can do so much more actually having a genuine, like, loyal following.
Right.
You know, it, by the way, honestly, it's sort of like what I deal with in politics. They're like, well, you know what people appreciate? Authenticity.
Absolutely.
You know, and everything's been so force-fed, and everything's so recycled, and, name the last NRA ad you saw. Like, you don't remember it because you've been looking at the same thing for 40 mm-hmm. years. There's no creativity, in the space. And so we're just trying to do something, you know, totally different. And I think it's taken off. The amount of people that are, hey, man, I love what you're doing with it. It's like, really? Wow, you're seeing that. And,
right.
you know, we're so new on a relative basis, but it's good.
Yeah, and you know, and you said, you know, as an doing honest gun reviews, you're not going to get rich with it. You know, that's I've been writing in the gun space for 9 years, and you're right, you're never going to get rich doing it. That's why I'm hosting a podcast, right? Because I'm not
this is where the big money.
That's right. If it is, I haven't found it yet. I love my gun broker and Go Wild guys, but you're right. So much of it, you know, when's the last time you read a bad gun review? In a mainstream gun magazine, right? You don't see it.
Never.
And actually, I just read an article the other day from a guy, and you know, I'll leave him and the publication nameless, but he was trying to justify away why you'll never see his name on a bad byline, you know, on a bad review, because we don't waste our time with that stuff. I'm like,
which is equally a disservice, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's one thing like sitting around friends going, "You try this new thing? Oh, yeah, it sucks. Don't get it." You know, versus the worst a gun magazine generally will do is that we just don't write about it. Well, that doesn't do your friend a service. You know,
right.
Your readership a service. You
exactly.
Telling the truth does.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. So, you know, and talk about with Field Ethos, about it being adventure, living an adventurous life and things like that, you guys are you really take that to heart and you mean it, because Field Ethos also has the Field Ethos Outrider.
Yeah.
Right. And that is all about tailored experiences and hunts. And so talk to us a little bit about the Outrider side of things.
I think that really stemmed just organically. It was not, it's not ever going to be a major part of our financial business, but since we have such a following that call us and say, hey, you know, get DMs or emails that, you know, I'm planning my first African trip. You guys have been to a bunch of places there. Who should I? So we were recommending different lodges that we like, that are honest, that are good. And I'm like, we should have a guy doing this. So we took one of Don's oldest friends in the industry.
Yeah, literally. Like when I got out of college and started hunting, it was actually a hunting guy that we just became buddies. You know, in our early 20s. I mean, we have pictures where we're big, fat, like we've both trimmed out since then. And he was a hunting guide, and he was a gregarious guide, just working hard. He started running lodges and for people, and you know, took over a bunch of lodges in Argentina, like, you know, high end sort of wing shooting places.
Okay.
And like, it's someone I've known for 25 years. I was like, if we're gonna do this, like, that's the guy, because he understands quality, he understands the experience, and yep. you know, again, about authenticity. It's not just, well, find the biggest guy that does that, and like, we'll slap a sticker on it that says Field Ethos approved and rake in some revenue. It was like, no, if we're going to do this, if we're going to recommend it, we're not going to recommend everyone to everything. Trips we've been on, people we've actually hunted with, guys that we know who've actually been on that camp, not just someone who can stroke the check for, you know, and dollars. And so the Outrider program, just for the people who, you know, are trying to get into, you know, what is that Africa hunt? What's the first Africa hunt? Mm-hmm. What's the 15th? You know,
right.
what's the, hey, I got to complete my big five. Like,
yeah.
those are the guy, and it just depends on where you are. So, you know, we're tailoring those experiences, those adventures, doing it. We're doing a lot more now also with fishing, with Field Ethos Waterman.
Yes.
You know, and that's some great content, because it's not just fishing. It's, you know, surfing and diving. I'm a free diver in a lot of, you know, spearfishing, and just it's really cool. And what's great about, like, stuff, even like the spearfishing,
mm-hmm.
you know, everyone can go, you know, pay a lot of money to go shoot a 400-inch whitetail, you know, inside a pen and everything like that.
Right.
Not everyone can go shoot bluefin tuna underwater, because even if you're in the area, like, you need a level of expertise. So it's almost – it's a lot more self-regulating, frankly, than hunting.
Sure.
Because, you know, every influencer can't just go do it.
Right.
You know, even if you're there, even if you have all the gear, even if you have the boats, even if you have the this, like – yeah, okay, hold your breath and dive to 100 feet, stay there for a minute or so, and then make something happen. And so, it,
right.
Again, what's authentic.
What's your static breath hold?
415.
Yeah. Mine's about 37 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't even tell you what mine is.
Yeah.
But
I was in Hawaii with Dubin,
yep.
And I'm in the pool with him just sitting around, and I would go underwater and hold my breath, and I'd come up, look at my watch, trying to get better at it.
Yeah.
He goes, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm just trying to see what my breath hold is. He goes, you know, you don't have to go underwater for that. You just hold I'm like, oh, fucking
yeah.
idiot.
Yeah.
That's funny. So, you know, everyone around the table has shot a wide variety of firearms, and there's stuff that everybody likes, there's stuff that everybody hates. But if you could own one gun for the rest of your life, I see Don going, oh man,
that's,
you know, that's like
question.
That's like asking someone like, you know, who's your favorite kid?
Yeah.
Like, no one will say.
Oh, I can tell
but
you.
But
I won't
a
admit it.
Kid,
yeah.
You know,
no, my
yeah.
daughter definitely.
Yeah, yeah, agree.
One gun.
That's a tough one, right?
Listen,
it's impossible.
You can't. But, like, I could probably get down to about 100, maybe 50. But after that, you're going to be talking cold, dead hands.
Okay, so let's change it then and say, what was the first gun you guys shot? What gun did you learn how to shoot on?
Well, I learned how to shoot on, like, a little, you know, pump Crossman, air gun. And then I, you know, got into, you know, 22 and small bore and that kind of stuff. The first gun I ever owned was a Remington 1100.
Okay.
Shotgun. I went to, you know, when I was in boarding school, went young, and they out in central Pennsylvania, they had skeet and trap right off campus. They had a rifle range literally on campus. It was a big feeder school to the academies and stuff like that. So, started doing a lot of that. And, you know, now, you know, my sort of, if you take out the hunting side of it, my passion sort of like just long range precision. I was shooting, you know, long range 25 years ago, you know, about 15, 20 years before it was all the rage and cool back when
right.
we were, you know, shimming bases because scopes didn't have did not exist. Right. So, that's sort of my passion. So anything super accurate.
I think a better question might be, well, not better, maybe easier to answer question is what is a dream holy grail gun for you?
Ooh, that's
you,
a good one. Yeah.
Ooh, well, that's
own.
Different. I mean,
yeah,
then we talk about like what we saw, you know, last week at DSC where it's like, you know,
right. Is it a Hall & Royal?
Saluz, you know,
gun.
Double rifle, elephant gun. It's like, you know, if I had a gun from history, you know.
Jim Corbett.
Roosevelt's lever action from Africa. Mm-hmm. One of those, like, if there was a.
Take out the historic component. If you were just going to say a dream gun that you could go buy.
A dream gun that I could go buy?
Yeah. Money wasn't an option.
It'd have to be some sort. And I don't even. Honestly, I don't even really like hunting with double rifles, but it'd have to be a double rifle.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Meaning I would rather carry
cool.
a bolt gun and that's light and I could shoot it faster. It's so, but yeah, it would
probably a Hall & Royal Deluxe.
Probably something like that. Yeah.
It's fully engraved.
500 nitro,
yep,
470 nitro.
500, yeah.
Brett, what about you?
Oh, probably a Taurus GX4. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree with
spoken like the true marketing
yeah.
guy.
The generational gun.
No, I agree with the double rifle. That's kind of always the aspirational, yep, like, cool factor and all of that. Like, to answer your question about if you could only have one gun, mm-hmm, and it was like a
Taurus GX4.
Yeah, Taurus GX4 again. Probably like a 45-70 lever gun would be my choice for that. Just
really? Your one gun?
Yeah, just because, like, you can... You could do whatever you
do a lot
like
with
you,
it.
You can defend yourself with it. You can kill stuff with it. You can.
I've got a Wild West Guns Co-Pilot takedown.
That's a great gun. I have one of those too. It's a great gun. You know, and it's funny. Like I have this thing for takedown. So I have an old Wesley takedown. That's a badass, built on an old Mauser action and stuff like that. So. You never actually take them down, but knowing that you could, you know, makes everything so much cooler. So
exactly.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Well, watch this and take it apart.
And with you guys sitting around the table, not that anyone listening gives a shit what my grail gun would be, but I'm going to tell you anyway because I'm the host of the show. Having held Teddy Roosevelt's Holland & Holland double rifle that he took to Africa in 1909, after holding that gun in my hands, I'm like,
That's it.
Like, I want a new one of those. Make me one of those.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, like that is just, there's just something about a double rifle. You know, as you guys have said, they're just magical guns.
Yeah.
And they just.
told this story before, but I did obtain a Grail gun for me a few years ago, which, if you ever read The Last Ivory Hunter by Capstick.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Wally Johnson's rifle. Yep. And he finally escaped Mozambique and got to California in the probably 70s, mid-70s. He got one rifle, which is the gun he had his whole life. It was 1938, Model 70, 375, and he shot thousands of elephants with that. And his boy, Walter, was a professional hunter in Botswana, and he shot thousands of elephants and buffalo and everything else. And I met him at SHOT Show, I want to say, a number of years ago. I was a huge fan. You know, I read this since I was 13 years old. We kind of stayed in touch. Nobody in his family was a hunter, gun owner, or anything like that. So I ended up purchasing that rifle from him, and it's been shot out. I mean, you look down the barrel, there's no bluing on it anywhere. The rear sight's been missing and, like, bronzed on. Like,
yeah,
a little
doesn't matter.
The wood is all messed up. There's no checkering left on it. Shockingly, it still shoots like minute of angle groups.
Yeah.
And my plan is to take it back to Mozambique and shoot an elephant with it back in his old stomping ground.
That is so cool.
Wrote it up in the contract that if any kid, you know, shirt tail relative comes out of the woodwork and wants that, they can have it back at the same price. I mean, I'm just kind of a caretaker of it until somebody else wants it.
And that's how it is. You know, we don't truly own any of it. We are just caretakers of all of it. You know, my background's in museums. I worked at the NRA museums. You know, you mentioned Peterson. You know, I worked with Bob Peterson's collection. And
amazing collection.
Amazing collection. Yeah. You know, and we are but caretakers for that's a very short period of time, and fortunate enough to handle some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
The who's the main curator at NRA?
Well, a lot of them have retired.
Several years ago. Phil Schreier,
Doug Wicklund, Jim Spica. Yeah.
So he, you know, I started my career in the editing business working for Peterson's Publishing. And Phil Schreier told me a story about when he went out and, you know, he willed that most of that collection to the NRA.
Yep.
And so Phil went out and the wife was still alive and went through the vault room and curated everything and packed it up to go to the NRA. And he goes, when I was done, it was kind of going through a hotel room, like you just kind of look under things, make sure you didn't leave anything there. And he goes, I kicked something that was like in like a newspaper roll, kind of crumpled up newspaper at the bottom of this drawer. And I kind of kicked it with my foot. And I'm like, what is that? Picks it up. It's a gold nugget. Like this big. Mm-hmm. And like, it turns out it's the world's third largest gold nugget ever found. And he brings it upstairs to Margie.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I found this in the vault room. She goes, we were wondering what happened to that.
Yeah. She said, I think it was like, we've been looking for that for like 5 years. Yeah. I'm like, man, if I lose $5 in the washing machine,
I'm looking for it.
I'm not waiting 5 years to try to find it. Another one that they found stuffed in a sock back in a drawer was a Colt Baby Patterson, you know, six-figure historic revolver, just stuffed in a sock in a drawer. Yeah. Like, you know, but Bob's collection was so impressive. I mean, he's got the only three Parker Invincible shotguns ever made, you know, like a Patterson's not really registering for him, you know.
Right. Yeah, he had an amazing collection, and even his car collection. To this day, the Peterson car collection in L.A., you know.
Yep, so it is unrivaled, you know. Well, gentlemen, we really appreciate you spending some time and talking with us. I know your time is very valuable, so we appreciate you spending some of it with us and sharing some stories. And it's been an absolute honor and a pleasure to have you guys here. So thank you so much for coming on the No Low Ballers podcast.
Likewise.
Thank you for having us. Very fun.
Don't forget to check out Field Ethos.
Yes,
I gotta sell. I mean,
absolutely. Check out Field Ethos. You know, make sure you're booking trips with Field Ethos Outrider. Make sure you're buying Taurus Raging Hunter revolvers and taking them to Africa and shooting buffaloes in the face. Right?
Yes.
Awesome. Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, well, that's it for us on this episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. Really appreciate you tuning in and joining us. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite platform. Give us some likes. Leave us some comments. We do read and respond to the comments. We appreciate all the feedback. We hope you guys enjoyed consuming this episode as much as we enjoyed making it, because without you, there is no us. So that's it for us today, and we will see you right here again on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.